Okay, I would like to call to order the Administrative Control Board meeting for Mountain Regional Water. It is 6:10. First on the agenda is the presentation from Corolla for the initial screening of alternatives, Signal Hill Water Treatment Plant Optimization.
Sweet. This thing isn't turning on, though. All right. Well, thanks for your time. Sorry to wrap it.
Yeah, well, hopefully they'll get that. I mean, it's going to be this way for 3 weeks, right? So.
Fun, fun, fun. Okay, so we'll get into it. We'll talk about the initial screening of alternatives for the optimization project at Signal Hill that we've been working on here for a couple of months. Presentation agenda, we'll do a little introduction and background, talk about big picture alternatives, shortlisted alternatives, summary, and then wrap up the next steps. And this is a discussion. If you have any questions, just feel free to type up and we'll field them as, talk about them as they come up. So from the conceptual design is the first part of this project and workflow for there is to come up with a list of alternatives, have a screening workshop and develop 2 to 3 shortlisted alternatives. So that's kind of what we're in the middle of doing. Today's meeting, we'll talk about our list of alternatives for the future of Sand Hollow or Signal Hill water treatment plant and the use of Lost Canyon water and discuss how we screened alternatives to shortlist for further evaluation. So, and by the way, where we are in this project, where we've had that screening workshop, and this is the kind of summary presentation of the results. So a couple of caveats on this screening. So it's not based on an in-depth analysis or detailed capital and O&M costs, et cetera. We're not at that point yet. Rather, it's based on big picture criteria, must-have, pros and cons, and meeting the objectives. We're relying at this point on the previous work, the previous good work that's been done by Jacobs. We're building on that effort. And this stage of the process, we're using, relying on much of those previous costs as an anchor point and adding order of magnitude costs where needed as we look at these different alternatives. And in terms of individual nut and bolt screening of individual process decisions, we're not at that stage yet. You'll see where we've can nail the alternatives down to, but in terms of deciding between, say, sending residuals to Sustainable Basin Water Reclamation District, that's even still on the table, or mechanical dewatering, we haven't finished or started those evaluations yet. We want to make sure we're aligned with Mountain Regional on kind of where we're going from there. And, okay, so we've established a big picture criteria for the initial screening, and this is the important stuff. These are the objectives. This is what we're trying to do with this project. Trying to meet increased demand, trying to fully utilize Mountain Regional's Lost Canyon water, meet the water quality objectives that's been established. Of course, drinking water regulations is a minimum of that. Increase safety, improve operations and maintenance, provide an increased reliability and redundancy, and provide some resiliency, resiliency for future conditions, either regulatory changes or wildfires, or et cetera. And then, of course, capital and O&M costs are always important in driving us. So, thinking about demands, the system demands are projected to increase, and is this. Let's work on there.
I'm taking this time pointer.
Yeah, we had it for a second. I need to get up there and now we can point. If we need to, I'm happy to do that. So the current plan previously established is to expand Signal Hill to quote fully utilize the 5.4 MGB Lost Canyon project capacity. Existing reliable capacity is 2.6 MGD. It's shown there in the yellow. And one next phase could be expansion to 3.4 MGD reliable capacity. and then following that up with a 5.4 MGD expansion to 5.4 MGD to help meet your increasing demands. So to get there, we've thought about this at the screening level and in this range of big picture alternatives. On the far left is the plant's got enough issues, let's just abandon the plant and do something completely different. So on the far left is abandoning the existing Signal Hill water treatment plant. And on the far right is the other extreme of, no, let's stay the course. We're going to use those existing assets, expand them, improve them, get that to the 5.4 MGD to meet those future demands, and then kind of two alternatives in between that are different steps along the way. And we'll talk about each of these four alternatives. There's some sub-alternatives that, that fit into each one. And the first is abandoning the existing plant. So, and a couple of those four alternatives that fit into this category, abandon the existing plant and purchase wholesale water, purchase the full 5.4 MGD of wholesale water. Pros on that, it avoids any investment in the existing plant. The cons are there are definitely assets at that plant that are useful and have remaining life, service life, and we'd be stranding those assets. Another con is the capital investment to convey finished water from Park City Municipal Corporation to Mountain Regional. Just as an example, the Spine Road booster pump station's got 740 GPM capacity, which is about 1 MGD. And so if we are going to abandon the plant and get water from Park City, we have to pay for the infrastructure to get that water up into the main part of your service area. And it's not just a little bit more capacity, it's a lot more capacity, you know, 5 or 6. It would incur ongoing water fees paid to Park City, and these are some numbers from the Jacobs report, you know, $2.5 million of interconnect fees. And that was just for 2 MGD capacity, not our full 5.4 MGD capacity. So there's real dollars there associated with purchasing wholesale water.
So would that go up, you know, if that's up for only 2 MGD, does that mean that the whole 5.4 is going to be more like $6 or $7 million?
Annually.
Yeah, that's significant.
Not only is that money, but you also lose control over rate increases. You know, you're at the mercy of others, I guess, if you look like that. And you lose control over the treatment operations. You know, you get the water quality you get at the cost that's established by others. There's also some existing legal framework, and I can't speak too much to this, but Andy or Sam can. But this is just the current contract or legal arrangement with Park City doesn't accommodate this additional.
Yeah, on paper, through the regionalization agreement, you don't have to where you have the capacity and the system that would convey water from Park City to.
It would trigger the importation project earlier than otherwise, the importation project from Weber Basin, and you end up with treatment staff that would have to be reassigned to different jobs within not regional. So the second sub-alternative is abandon the plant where it's at and rebuild it at a completely new location and rebuild it at the 5.4 MGD. There are pros to that. We can start from scratch and we can build a well-configured treatment facility that's resilient to future changes. And you've probably heard all this before in previous presentations on the project. Signal Hill's got some quirkiness. There's some challenges to that plant that need to be addressed. And this would let you start from a new with a blank slate, and we could build it with the right features that you'd appreciate. And you can also keep the existing plant online during construction while you're doing it. So those are the pros. The cons are a brand new plant is going to be, especially a brand new plant in a new location, is going to cost a lot of money, especially plants of this size, smaller plants. It's just, they're just high cost for the capacity. And so, you know, in rough numbers, it could be $8 to $10 a gallon to develop a new site and put a new water treatment plant. That could be $40 to $50 million for a 5.4 MGD plant.
Not using land.
Yeah, and these are rule of thumb numbers that's applicable today. But we didn't do any detailed cost estimate on those. But the order of magnitude is, you know, is similar. It's expensive. Plants of this size, especially in our post-inflation, post-COVID world, is they're pricey. Long gone are the days of back in the day when Mike and I started. You know, we think about $1 a gallon, and that doesn't exist anymore. So then we've got capital costs to convey raw water to the new site, and then convey the finished water back to Signal Hill. Or back to the promontory area, back to where the water's needed. And you also have stranded assets at Signal. We did look at a couple other just tweaks on this to avoid some of the infrastructure, linear infrastructure to get it there. And one is if we demo the plant at the existing location and rebuilt it at that location. And has the same advantages. We can start from scratch. We can build a robust treatment facility. It's got another advantage where we don't have to worry about any conveyance, either on the finished water or the raw water side. Same cons. It's going to be an expensive plant. Not quite as expensive as the other one because the infrastructure's there, but still very high cost and incur an additional cost of trying to figure out how to supply the system while that plant is completely offline. And that would be buying water from Park City, which probably could be done, but it's going to be not only expensive, but you're going to have to pay for the infrastructure to get the water up to the, from Park City up to the promontory area. And that's even kind of worse at that point, because once the new plant is built, that infrastructure, you know, is no longer needed. So it's temporary infrastructure. We got a little clever and said, well, what if we did something different and use, you've got that pond up there with the solar panels, which we'd have to figure out what to do with or relocate them. But, you know, we could reconfigure things and take advantage of the land where the pond is, build a new plant there, and either live with less volume or find a way to modify the pond perimeter to restore some of that original volume. So that gives you the ability to leave the plant in service, and that can help. We have the same advantages, starting from scratch, building a water treatment plant while the other one's online, using the infrastructure. But same drawbacks of high capital cost for brand new plant, and it's easy to draw that line there and say, well, just going to put where the pond is. But it can be done, but it would be, there's real cost to make that work from engineering and geotech and all that perspective. So, and the last is, can you build it on, can we buy some adjacent property so we can build the new plant, keep an existing plant in service, use the surrounding land so we don't have to pay for any infrastructure to and from the plant. And that has similar pros that we can start from scratch. We can keep the plant online while we're building it. We keep the basically the conveyance the same, but we're back. We're still with the high cost of a new water treatment plant. And then I'm sure they're not giving away that land for free at this point. So there's,
and it's super duper steep. I mean, you're like from here, it looks flat, but it's absolutely not.
There's definitely topography there that would be challenging, which we really should have listed as a con. But Okay, so that's the full-blown abandon the existing plant. And then what if we just leave the plant exactly the way it is? What if we spent no money on the plant and, whoops, and just kept it at its 2.6 MGD reliable capacity and found an additional 2.8 MGD elsewhere? And this alternative that elsewhere is purchasing wholesale water. The advantage is we're not spending any money on the existing plant. The con is we're not addressing any of our objectives in terms of what's on the plant side. So there's some real safety concerns that really want to be addressed. There's real operations and maintenance concerns that really want to be addressed. And we have some of the same drawbacks of getting water, finished water from Park City up to the promontory area. Same drawback of the water fees. And we still really have ongoing investment needs at the existing plant, GAC replacements, membrane replacements. And this would also, even that 2.8 MGD is enough to trigger the importation project earlier for the region than it was. And really for this one, the issues at the plant really, really do need and want to be addressed. And so doing nothing is not a great option and probably a non-starter. So what if we left it at 2.6 MGD and made just some minimal investments? And this is just a little bit hard to look at, but here's the minimum investments. This is a new chemical building, which is one of the biggest health and safety issues at the existing plant and process limitations. And this is just another figure shown on top of it. So it's a section looking at the flash mix. The existing, the very first step of the process in the plant is not very effective the way it is and really wants to be improved. And that will help the plant a lot. So if we were doing this minimum that we could do at the plant, it would be that project, probably those two projects. So low cost, certainly. It addresses the absolute essentials, the chemical building and the flash mix. But it doesn't address all the issues, especially the O&M issues at the plant. There are significant ones that remain. And we still incur all this conveyance cost for the additional 2.8 MGD. And if we did that, it's about $5 million. A new chemical building and those flash mix improvements is on the order of $5 million. But leaves quite a bit untouched that really needs attention. And then the interconnect project, cap costs for that are greater than $1.8 million. And water fees, that's at $2.5 million annually for about that much. So the next tweak or the next iteration as we move towards expanding plant to 5.4 MGD is let's do more than just the minimum. Let's really improve the plant to get it to a reliable 3.4 MGD. And we still have 2 MGD to make up, right? We're still trying to get to 5.4 MGD to satisfy that demand requirement. So we'd still be purchasing ultimately 2 MGD of wholesale water. And what we do to bring that plant up to 3.4 MGD capacity is the chemical building and the flash mix, and then addressing TOC. TOC is total organic carbon. It's one of the process challenges at the plant is it takes a lot of the GAC usage to meet the TOC objectives and resulting disinfection byproduct objectives. So there's some things we can do to that 3.4 MGD capacity that will help fix that. To bring that capacity up, we're adding an additional membrane rack and we're improving the solids handling process. So that is a viable alternative as we look at it. And it's this alternative that was presented before in the Jacobs report, which we agree with. It's a high cost alternative relative to just expanding the plant all the way to the 5.4 MTV. On the right is the net present value. If you look down at the bottom, 25-year net present value, which looks at initial investment plus annual costs for 25 years, bring that all to one number, and it's $47 million if we're going to keep it at 3.4 MGD and buy 2 MGD of capacity for the wholesale water versus 33 million for the net present value of expanding the plant to 5.4 MGD. So it's got a higher net present value than this next alternative we'll talk about. And
so that it means we would have spent $47 million.
Yep.
And that has the purchased water.
Yep.
In
yep.
Okay.
Yep. And that's, 47. The capital costs are up at that top line. It's the operating costs that are really driving all that up. The annual O&M cost down below. And the biggest one, if you see second line up from the bottom, is the $2.5 million annual interconnect water fees that's on the left hand side and on the right hand side.
Why are the capital costs the same?
So that assumes a optimization project and then a phase more expansion focused project. So the first row are similar, but not expect the same efficiency.
Yeah, they're the same. It's the second row. The second row is the second phase.
Well, I see that now. Thank you.
So the same first phase, the second line says we're going to expand it in that second phase.
And that's what kind of offsets the buying the water.
Yep.
And over time, it pays to do the capital.
Okay. And then the other cost that's up there in the capital costs on the left-hand side is the infinite project. So so if you look just at the capital cost, it's lower on the left-hand side, even with the expansion and the interconnect project, because in one case you're adding $1.8 million, in the other case you're adding $5.7 million. But the killer is those annual fees, the interconnect fees, basically purchasing that water, that $2.5 million per year at the bottom. And then on the left is just a non-economic evaluation looking at site impacts, O&M impacts, resiliency, safety, long-term reliability. The higher the score, the better. It's just the more non-economic benefit there is. And on the right is expanding the 5.4 MGD that we'll talk about next, and it's got higher economic criteria. Okay, so let's now talk about this far right hand side, which is expand the San Jolo, or Signal Hill. Sorry, I keep saying San Jolo. I've got two plans that are SHWTP, Signal Hill. expand at 5.4 MGD. So this is, it could be done in a phased approach or in a single project. We just wanted to touch bases on this. The alternative we're looking at up here is the previous recommended plan from the Jacobs project. Phase one takes us to 3.4 MGD. Phase two can be postponed for X number of years to get you up to the 5.4 MGD. Most of the work happens in phase one. Phase two gives us some additional GAC contactors and additional membrane skids. And if you, and you can do that in that phase approach, or you can just combine them both at the same time, bite the bullet once, hire one contractor, blow and go on the whole thing. And if you were going to phase it, what would be the advantage of the phased approach? Your rate increases can be smoothed out over time, not investing all that money up front. We are getting the safety and the operational benefits. We're taking care of all that in the first phase. And then ultimately this project because we're taking advantage of the full 5.4 MGD, we're really utilizing all of your Lost Canyon water too. Right, too. The cons of phasing it, it is less efficient. You end up with two designs, two contractors, two mobilizations. It does have a higher net present value compared to a single project. Ultimately, it will cost you more, although it defers the cost of that upfront cost for a number of years. Less redundancy in supply, that's initially before you get to that second phase. Now, even when you expand the plant to 5.4 MGD right away, even if you're not using that 5.4 MGD, take advantage of the assets that are there. If you have trains go out of service or something like that, or maintenance problem, you have other trains that can pick up the slack, reducing your production. And then we could go back and look at that curve from the demand curve, but you know, is it really time to wait? If you do this project now, by the time you're done, how many years is it going to be before you need to start the next project? And it likely is not that many based on those demand projections and how long it's going to take. So it's not like you're waiting 20 years to make that next investment. It'll happen pretty quickly based on demand projections. And then if you don't do it in a phase approach, one project to rule them all, you're doing it in a single project. So the advantage of that is you got one design, you got one contractor, you're doing it once. Overall, it's a lower net present value. The biggest con is it is a bigger upfront cost. It's a bigger check you write on day one. And you'll see as we get into this is really from the alternatives we'll look at next, at least at this point, it really isn't a need to figure out whether you're going to do it one project or a phase project, really from in these next alternatives that we'll look at, which is what we're suggesting in the next steps. We can come up with a final recommended alternative and then look and say, well, can we phase this? Is there a reason? You know, here's where we're heading. Does it make sense to phase it? And what are the advantages and disadvantages to that? So we don't have to make that call, and we're not right now. So for this number four, for this alternative of getting to 5.4 MGD with the existing Signal Hill plant, we've come up with some shortlisted alternatives, and there's two of them that we're going to want to talk about. They're both, neither of them are exactly what was presented before. As in the work we've done so far, the core of that project is the core of what was started with is essentially there, but we've tweaked it and found some cost saving measures and two different alternatives that we really don't look at. And that's what we're presenting here. So in alternative one, and we'll talk about each of these elements next, but just to highlight them, there's five elements to alternative one. We're going to convert the plant to direct filtration. We'll talk about what that means. We're going to add membrane skids. We're going to add GAC vessels, but within the existing building. We'll send the solids to Snyderville Basin, Water Recognition District, and we'll construct a new chemical building. And these are all elements that we'll further define as we move forward. And ultimately, you'll see they can be mixed and matched. These two alternatives cover the range of the processes, of the process improvements we're going to look at. So let's talk about each of those. So for direct filtration, this is we're looking down at the existing plant. The water comes in here. There's a sedimentation, there's flocculation basin here, sedimentation basin here. And then we go on to the membrane racks. There's a membrane rack there. Another one here. There's two more off the page. And this sedimentation basin is, in particular, has just some process challenges. It does not work very well at all. And it doesn't work very well the way it's configured. It to flow from this flocculation basin into the sedimentation basin, there's a valve there and flow control on the plant. And that valve undoes everything that we did up here. We're trying to build these big flock particles and settle them out, and they need to be big to settle out. And when we go through that pipe right there, it's like putting a through a blender, and it breaks up all this flock that we formed, and it can't settle. And you can look at the data and see that there's not much benefit. This thing should be providing a lot of benefit. I've spent my career building these, and I'm a fan of them, but the way it is currently configured, it doesn't work. And we can't fix it. Just, we can't fix it because of building limitations, building instruction. It's baked into that whole facility. So this convert to direct filtration, a conventional pre-treatment is we settle out the solids and then we go onto the membranes. Direct filtration is we're just going to take a raw water and we're going to put it directly onto the membranes. We're going to eliminate the sedimentation process. And we don't take that lightly. Again, I would typically say, ooh, sedimentation is good to have. And it is good to have, but you don't have an effective one right now. So this alternative is saying, we think, well, and we're getting ready to test this, that if we do the right stuff with the membranes, we don't need that failed sedimentation process. We can send all of these solids and put them on the membranes and they'll do just fine. So that's what convert to direct filtration is. And when there's huge cost savings if this can work, because this area we can use, there used to be two sedimentation basins. There's another one right here. And it was repurposed for handling some of the residuals that come off the membranes. The membranes backwash, and the other basin handles those residuals, and it's not big enough. But we can repurpose this to be just another one of those, and now we've solved some of our solids handling. So we're going to eliminate this process, but we're going to use that almost as is to provide some other benefits. And by the way, Quinn's Junction, a water treatment plant for Park City, is a direct, but they use the same exact membrane modules, and they don't have a sedimentation basin. They are operating direct filtration. Matter of fact, they're not even operating direct filtration. They're operating in something called inline filtration. We're going to keep your flock basins, and that helps. Quinn's doesn't even have flock basins, and they do just fine. They've never had a problem at their plant due to too many solids coming onto the membranes. So there is precedent with this water quality to treat the water successfully without flock set, without the sedimentation basins. So the second is add more membrane skids. To get to 5.4 MGD, we need more membrane skids. We're also going to add even kind of more than would be needed, because if we can provide more membranes, then that's a lower flow through each membrane, and that will help deal with the solids. So along with those membrane skids comes additional area that will help. And then the third is expand the GAC contactors in the existing building. This is looking down at the plant, those membranes, but there's those racks, 3 and 4. This is the left-hand side of the building, of the plant. This is the building footprint. There's 4 GAC contactors there. The original plan was, the Jacobs plan was, we need 4 more of these contactors. So we could need to build a building extension to accommodate 4 more. We, with some other improvements, we think we can relieve the GAC process so that it doesn't have to do as much work, such that we only need 2 GAC contactors. And we think we can get those in the existing building with some minor modifications. And that saves a building extension and 4 other GAC contactors and space for them. Send solids to Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District. We will look at that. There's going to be some challenges with that we already know about. We're going to take one more crack at working with them to see what the costs would be. That will be viable. They would take them. The question is, under what conditions are they going to take them? And how much capacity, if there's probably sewer capacity to get the solids, to get the flows down there. And then there's some additional stuff. The nature of these solids is such that it doesn't work great at the plant. You know, it's solids, but it isn't any food for the biology that's needed at the plant. And so Quinn's wasn't ever planning on this. We didn't bake that into their plant, but it evolved with time. Centerville Basin looked at it and said, oh, we really need some BOD, we really need some food for our bugs here. And so they have a whole new chemical feed system they had to add to the solids on the way out to Centerville Basin to make those solids have less impact at their plant. So we will take a look and we'll compare what it takes to send them the solids versus expanding the mechanical dewatering. And that's in that second alternative. And then a new chemical building that expands the footprint of the existing building. It was part of the previous plan from the previous effort. So that's alternative one. And alternative two has got the same five objectives, but we're doing it a different way. And the way we've got this structured, we'll be able to develop both of these alternatives so we can compare and contrast and identify the best solution. And it might be a combination of, it might be mixing and matching between these concepts, between alternative one and alternative two. So alternative two will build a new sedimentation basin attached to the existing flock basin. If we find that, ooh, we really do need that process, that sedimentation process, we've got a more cost-effective way to develop that that we'll look at here in a minute. Switching the membrane configuration from the current configuration to an alternate configuration that is a little bit more typical. We'll see that in a minute. So it's replacing all the membrane. We're not just going to add new membrane skids. We're going to replace the existing membrane skids with a different way to configure them. And then if we find that we need the four contactors, we'll expand the GEC to accommodate all of those new contactors. And if we find we can't go to the Centerville Basin, we'll do mechanical dewatering, and then also the same chemical building. So if we look at those, get back up here again real quick. So one of the challenges, and I'm trying not to get down in the weeds, but this is that sedimentation basin we just talked about. There was the other one that had already been repurposed. Flow comes in here into the flash mix, and it will go through the flock basin and then that said basin. Right now, that's what all the flow does. And it's this is where the problem is. I can't fix the problem that is happening between flock and said. The building's just built the way it's built, and I can't fix it. But if we find we need sedimentation, I don't have to build a whole new, I don't have to replace all of this stuff. I can use the flash mix. I can use the flocculation, and I can, instead of hanging a left here and going into this process, I can hang a right, and this is new construction. I can build that in the right way to avoid the problem that this has. So this is a way to get sedimentation without having to scrap the whole front end of the plant. And so if we find, and we're in these evaluations right now, we've done a bunch of jar testing, we're getting ready maybe next week to start some full-scale testing to test, can we operate this facility without that sedimentation process? If we find that works, we're going to go direct filtration because it's going to be clearly the low-cost alternative. If we find it doesn't work and we need sedimentation, or if we look at this alternative and say, well, I'm really worried about forest fires. I really want a super resilient system. You know, even if direct filtration does work, you might want to go this route anyway. You'll be equipped with the tools, the costs to make that decision when we get there. But certainly if we find we need that direct filtration doesn't work, this is the attractive alternative that was that'll get us exactly what we want without having to scrap the whole plant and rebuild it. So there's real cost. This is more expensive than the direct filtration, but it's significantly less expensive than, say, building the whole plant. And then this is a little harder to see. I'll get back up here. So we call this a Quinn-style membranes, and it really is more typical. The Quinn-style is most membrane systems are configured the way that is. The current configuration at Signal Hill is they act more like standalone little modules. They're four standalone little modules that each have their own. So if you look in the background, this is a module. They each have their own two tanks. Those two tanks are a little raw water tank and a little finished water tank, and they have their own pump on it and their own backwash pump. And it's non-traditional to have a bunch of these at a plant like we have right now. And if we really find that we need even more membranes to make that direct filtration work, we can get more membranes within this building footprint if we go to a more traditional or a Quinn set of membranes. And these kind of yellow boxes that are shown here, those are that's a single rack, that's a rack, that's a rack, and that's a rack. So we're getting four racks in the same basic footprint, but there's a lot more membrane area because the whole rack is filled with membranes rather than just that little bit. And it incurs some different stuff. Instead of having individual tanks for each rack, we have one filtrate tank and one waste wash water tank. And there's some bigger changes that have to happen to make that work, but we can do it within the existing building. We can take advantage of the existing structure and end up with a different membrane configuration that gives us more membrane area, and we can get there without having to rebuild the whole plant. And as we go further, and we'll look at both alternatives, both this one and the previous one that just adds more racks the way it is. There's nothing wrong with what's there. So adding more racks the way it currently is, no hesitation in doing that. But we can't get as many membranes in the building as we can if we do this. So the work that we'll be doing and the testing we'll be doing over the next several months will be evaluating how important it is to get more membranes and how important it is to keep that sedimentation basin. So we've got alternatives that cover no matter what the answer is. And then there's the GAC building extension. If we have to get four more GAC contactors in there, these four, we have to get four more of those. Instead of modifying that, we'll just build a new building and put the four in there. And then mechanical dewatering. If it doesn't pencil out, well, we'll compare either way what it takes to continue to handle solids on site at the 5.4 MGD capacity with improved and operator friendly configuration. We'll compare that to sending solids down the Snyderville Basin and be able to make the right decision for you. And then same new chemical filter.
Are the solids, are the solids similar between the two alternatives that allow?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. And when you have the ability, so no matter what, if we need to build this sedimentation basin, we could accommodate higher chemical feed than we would in a direct filtration mode. Under normal operations, you wouldn't need to do that. So the solids would be the same. If you did have some extreme water quality conditions that came up, you could feed more chemical if you had this process, and that would translate to more solids.
I.e. you know, wildfire, yeah, the Benderson.
You'd want more solids if you have that event.
What's that?
You'd want more solids.
Well, there'll be more solids coming at you.
Yeah.
Okay. And when we talk about solid, when you talk about solids handling and mechanical dewatering, there's a byproduct of the treatment side. There's material in the water we're taking out. That material's got to go somewhere. that material turns out to be solids or residuals or sludge or whatever. So whatever's in the water that we're taking out, we've got to deal with. It's those solids that we're talking about sending to the either processing on site or sending in Steinville Basin. But we also, that's only half the solids. The other solids come from, we add chemicals to the water to get, make the treatment process work. And then those chemicals create their own solids in the process of helping us out. So when the forest fire hits, we have more solids coming at us, and the same amount of solids are coming at us between the two alternatives. In the southern one, if we can add more chemical to it, it might do a better job treating it. It's those additional solids that need to be. Okay, so in terms of all those alternatives, it's just a summary of some pros and cons. And again, we've kept this at a high level because we think this high level is enough information here to narrow our focus down moving forward and screen the alternatives to the one we really want to pursue. So if you, I'm just going to go here so we can point to it. So these four alternatives, abandoned, leave as is, build out to 3.4 MGD, or build it up to 5.4 MGD. This row is the last two alternatives we looked at. They all fall in this same row. And as we look in, if we just talk about the key pros of abandoning it, it's the low cost alternative, at least in terms of capital investment. If you look at the next one down, don't do anything to the plant, leave it as is. It's minimal capital investment. And then the bottom one is the key pros are it keeps you in control. Well, it keeps you in control. You're in control of the water. You're in control of the process. You're in control of rates. You're taking advantage of the water that you have a right to, and it's meeting all of your key objectives. And when the lowest net present value, that's compared to the alternative just above. We lay that first one, the cons are you do lose control. You know, you're pretty much 100% reliant on Park City, at least for this water. That's high capital cost if you're rebuilding stranded sand hollow assets, if you're rebuilding, and it triggers that importation process earlier. If you look at that second one, fundamentally, it's not addressing our key objectives. So we do nothing to the plant, then you're saddled with the current plant and its current configuration, with its current operational quirkiness, but more importantly, its safety concerns. And you're incurring some significant infrastructure capital costs between getting the water up there and getting it to it. Yeah, getting new water in from Park City into the quarry. And then we talked about those last two from a con. That third, that if you optimize a 3.4 MGD and you buy it, it actually has a higher net present value than the next one down, than the 5.4 MGD. And the non-economic, you're giving up some non-economic benefits as well. Biggest con of the last one is just that the near-term capital costs are higher. And then a summary on the right-hand side, if you look, the capital costs for abandoning are very high. O&M costs are high. If you just look down at the second one is really a non-starter because it doesn't meet your objectives. If you look at those, that bottom right corner, difference between 3.4 and 5.4 MGD is a higher capital cost, a lower O&M cost, but that net present value on balance is clearly favors just expand plan to 5.4 MGD. So really these, out of that, our initial screening that we've worked out with Mountain Regional as well is let's focus on that fourth alternative and that first, I guess, class of alternative and those two alternatives with their individual features are what we're going to spend some time evaluating, testing in the field, testing at the jar level, which we've already started, and really developing those to create the final configuration of those alternatives, and we can cost out and we can be back again to determine which of those two are the best way to go. So fundamentally, the short list is down to those two alternatives, which the next steps are developing those into more complete alternatives that we can then evaluate and compare. And in the meantime, we're also finishing bench testing that we've already started and have some really good data on. And full-scale testing is probably starting next week. Just a real quick thing on that. I've mentioned full-scale testing now without elaborating. One of the great things about the current configuration of those racks that have their own tanks, well, because they have their own tanks and they're kind of standalone little units, we can confiscate one of those. We can grab one of those and operate it in direct filtration mode and with some other improvements that we haven't talked about. And we can test this direct filtration concept full scale under normal operations with whatever water quality conditions is coming at the plant at no risk, because the plant is operating exactly the way in terms of automation. Brands have operated just exactly the way it's operating right now. The membranes don't care where the water's coming from. So from a water quality perspective, while we're doing this test, it's perfectly safe. We're not changing the water quality or putting the water quality at risk. And if we find the test isn't going quite so well and he needs to go take that one rack and go back to normal operations, it's four valves and a couple of SCADA buttons and he can go back to the normal operations. So this biggest cost saving concept of direct filtration mode, we can actually prove out before we invest any construction dollars. So when we say full scale testing, that's what's coming up.
One question on the direct filtration, which will obviously be the least expensive expansion of the 5.4.
Yeah.
On an order of magnitude, if we had to recreate the sedimentation, add on, do the piping where it routes back out to the new part that actually sedimented, are we talking about, like, if direct filtration is $25 million, is the new building and having to reintroduce sedimentation $35-40 million? Like, what's the difference? Like, how important is it that direct filtration hopefully works?
So that's a good question, and I'm not sure I have got the I don't have those numbers up.
But
I will say there really are three alternatives. We only talked about two. The third alternative we could have brought up here and discounted. But so the first alternative is direct filtration, significant cost savings there. The alternative that we didn't talk about here was building a brand new facility that's the flock in the sed. That's the flash mix and the flock in the sed. And that was looked at in the Jacobs report. It's a separate facility that sits on site, and it was $15 million or something like that. It was significant.
Okay.
And that one, we don't think if we couldn't do what this other alternative that I presented, if we couldn't do that, that would be the one we're comparing it to. Okay. But this one that I showed you here is a nice riff on that. And it probably cuts that cost in that additional cost for the full building, not quite in half, but probably cuts it by, you know, down to 40%, 30 or 40% of building that whole brand new facility.
So instead of $15 million, $10 million.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm just order of magnitude. I'm trying to get a concept of how much the
journey. The other thing, at that end of the building, you're going to be close to the property line. So there could be other barriers that's going to make that difficult.
Yeah.
And you have to really figure out how to make it work.
Yeah. And that's part of what we'll be looking right now. It's a concept that's out there that's attractive enough to look at. There may be a fatal flaw if it's too close.
I think that property is on the play.
It's on the hill. It's on your side of the driveway. It depends on how big it is.
Yeah.
Buildings are.
We'll help direct the pictures.
Well, that works well.
And again, so Quinn's is
doing that. And Twins is doing it with the same water.
Same water. Yeah. And without the flocculation.
Is Quincy pulling the water from
Volcanoes?
That's the river. Oh, I have the same source.
I just assumed it came from Poison Creek. You get over there renaming.
I don't know. Matter of fact, it's coming out of the same.
It's coming out of our pond.
And they share pipeline capacity.
Because it's what we've been pumping for years.
So, is as far as like capacity and year date projections, where does 3.4 get us versus 5.4? And I'm sure you said that.
Yeah, that's right.
And then there's a follow up to that.
Yep.
Okay. So we're going to have to go to 5.4 one day anyway.
One day anyway.
And then
the 3.4 could get us to maybe the mid 2030s. Early 2030s.
Okay. So then is there a difference in dollar amounts that we can put?
Yeah.
How do I say this, Andy?
And the next ones.
Is there a difference in dollars that we can collect through impact fees versus dollars that we collect through user fees from one to the other?
The big, and back a couple of years ago when we were going through this, if you don't mind going to the slide that's the 20, the big capital investment and then like the 5 million, that one. If you could split that more 50-50, I think it makes more sense. But since the huge investment is really just to get to 3.4, the additional 6 million to get to 5.4.
That's the impact fee side of the equation.
That's
cost. So the majority, the biggest expense is going from where we are to 3.4 to get us to 5.4 is not much.
To add more. The 2 MGD after the original doesn't cost much money.
Right. But by going to 5.4, can we shift some of that? I don't have the words.
We can collect on all of this
through impact.
Well, there's
through,
a portion of it.
A portion of
Collins allocated.
Because we can allocate a 10-year portion. So if we project growth and the treatment plant would be required to be to 5.4 within 10 years, all of the cost of the treatment plant would be in the current impact fee. Right now, I don't think we're projecting the full 10 million. Or the full treatment plant to be within need in the 10-year window.
And some of that, because it's safety and chemical storage, that is not eligible for.
Yeah, I guess what I'm trying to ask is the proportion of it that is able to be charged to impact fees, does that change between the two scenarios?
No, I think we're trying to be pretty aggressive either way. It might actually help doing it all at once.
To keep the ratepayers' rate lower?
To keep, or to have the impact be, let's say, more larger because it's more growth. Mm-hmm. Like if we're mixing all of these costs together, now we've got there's a big growth component to that investment.
Yeah.
If you go from just 2.6 to 3.4, you're not going to handle as much growth. And so that 21 million, more of it ends up allocated to not being growth, let's mm-hmm. say. So
but not as much eligible to be considered related.
The way we structured it with our current impact that you did last year is we want to call the source development projects together. So phase one and phase two are separate projects, and then we have a well in there as well. So we want all the source development projects together, and then kind of treat them as one bucket over time. So all the source development is kind of treated as one total sum of dollars from the impact perspective. Because if we chose just to include the phase one project, then that would be a much bigger burden of people in the near future. It's kind of what you're getting.
Yeah.
So they're trying to skirt that to make it more equitable over the long term. the project was combined, well, all three projects were combined in one entity, and it was smooth.
Right. I just want, again, I'm just bungling the question here, but like, does going to 3.4 MGD keep the ratepayers' cost lower across the same cross-section of time, 25 years, versus going to 3.4 and then 5.4 right at the same get-go?
I would say no. I think
it's probably
sixes. Okay. And it's a little premature in this meeting. We'll talk about this a little bit later, but Lisa has done a lot of work on the WIFIA. I've done some financial modeling. The WIFIA loan allows us to put off our first payment until 5 years after substantial completion, which buys time so that rate increases can be smaller and we have more customers paying by the time we actually have to make a payment. Because our rates are almost more driven by meeting that yearly debt ratio, which we always talk about, 1.25. We got to hit 1.25. So the longer we can put out debt payments, it just gives us more time to collect impact fees, to have rate increases, to have customers' growth before we have to make that first payment. And so that's kind of that also probably argues if we had to start to make debt payments in 2028, it'd be more tempting to just do the 3.4. But we're thinking we can put it off until 2033. Which we'll need 5.4 by then, and you know, we don't have to make a payment till then. So it helps the argument of doing it in one shot instead of trying to split it.
And that's a 40-year term, right? On the way.
40-year. Yeah. So I mean, we're early on. Like I said, we're getting a little ahead of ourselves. Don't mean to hold you here for that, but that helps our financing position a lot. Okay.
Understand it. Why, if you had 25 years at $2 million a year, it'd be $50 million, and it doesn't even come to 47.
It's a net present value calculation. They're kind of trying to bring everything back to today's dollars.
It's all of those two and a halves coming forward.
Yeah, because paying $2.5 million in 10 years isn't like paying $2.5 million today. It's, you get. So when they're trying to show you what hard costs are, it's so you can compare.
Those minimum installments have a discount rate applied to them. I don't remember what we used off the top of
it. 5%, I think, is what it says there.
Yeah, so it's saying 5%.
Just remember that 2.5 is just for 2 MGD.
Yeah. Buying water from Park City,
Park City's got debt service that they want other people to pay for. So even though they're shared infrastructure and other things, they're not really looking at it.
Oh, it's almost like there's $15 million in there that if you had, it could cover that 2.5 over 25.
I guess that's kind of one way to look at it.
Okay. Well,
No. That's... On the reverse, it's kind of like if you save for retirement when you're in your 20s or 30s,
mm-hmm.
you're a lot better off than trying to save in your 50s. This is kind of the inverse of that transaction. It's saying that they're trying to bring it back to today's dollars. So you'll be paying that over time, but
it's worth less in the future.
So that's why it doesn't add up. That's why 25 times 2.5, right, it's 75 million, but they're trying to so you can have the same numbers to compare.
Different, but
yeah.
I get it now.
Okay.
Alan, this was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was. It was really great. And I feel like I had some questions when we were going, like when I read it the first time, and I feel like I have a better handle of it now.
Sweet.
Thank you.
If you have any other questions, just let me know.
You'll be back.
I'll be back.
Yeah,
thank you.
Traffic
started.
Yeah. You may be back soon.
All right.
Thanks, Al.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Have a good night.
All right. Do we need to go into executive session?
Not.
Excellent. So moving on to the consent agenda, does anyone have any changes to the meeting minutes from last month?
Nope, I didn't.
Does anyone have any questions on the check register?
I didn't have any.
None? Mm-hmm. But you know I'm going to have some.
I would hope so.
So we had, what was the McDonald's Raw RVSS retrofit? Did you guys already know it?
Yeah, exactly. It's the RVSS is a soft start for the pumps in there. And it's it was one that had failed and it was replaced.
It's a pump station name is McDonald's.
McDonald's is in the college. Station and the RVSS is a mechanical, electrical component in there for starting the pumps.
I said there's an acronym in there. We're going to get busted.
And then there was an ElectroPower Utah charge for $10,750. Not sure why I objected to that, but
that was the RVSS repair.
Adult. Oh, so that's, that was probably all part of that.
That's all that same.
And then I felt like the Sitaway hay and feed loss was lower than normal.
It was less this year than it has been.
Oh, okay.
I can't remember exactly the math whether he had more hay or whether hay's cheaper.
And Brandon came to an agreement.
Hay's cheaper. Let's talk to a couple of people who buy hay. Hay's cheaper.
But that's our only charge that we're going to have for the hay and feed this year.
Yeah. We had another charge from them earlier to have to do some pump repair work on the irrigation system for them. So their total expense for the year is about 10 grand, but this was the hay loss.
Okay. And then, Paul walked the $2,400 overpayment refund. What would, why would somebody have overpaid by $2,400?
What was the last name?
Walked, W-A-C-H-T.
He had two auto pays from two different accounts.
Oh, okay.
So he just was. Awesome. Thank you. I had not picked that one up.
I just, it seemed like a huge overpayment.
Okay.
Yeah. He was actually requesting it from all his utilities because it was all of his utilities. I like his savings account. I guess. Oh, you don't pay interest. Not interest.
Yeah.
Okay. Did anyone have any questions on the purchase orders?
I didn't.
No questions. Okay. Does anyone want to make a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Can I just make a comment on the furniture purchase?
Oh, yes.
It may seem premature. We're trying to lock in a price. Prices have already gone up from when we started this process back in January. So we were trying to hedge our bets and get ahead of a 2025 price increase. That's why you're seeing it now, even though we're a year out from occupying our new space.
Okay.
I move to approve the consent agenda.
Okay, do we have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, it's unanimous. Great. So, Steve, you're backed up.
All right. The water usage continued high in August, so we are continuing to do significantly better than budget. A combination, again, of high water sales and high interest on a large cash balance is what's pushing our revenue above budget. We are $2.2 million better than budget. So what that's going to do is generate an additional, basically almost $2 million to go into capital projects in the future. So this is good, having that money, because it just helps future investments. We already have some of the money to be able to do more in the future.
But so the average home is using more. It's not just growth related and
there's an element of growth, but it's a combination of 8% rate increase we did last year, probably about 4 or 5% growth, customer base, and then also higher usage. One of those would have not created. It's kind of the factors of all of those that's creating it. We would be very close to budget if it had been just the growth and same usage as we'd seen.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get into that a little bit more a little bit later. So down on the next, just down a little bit, you'll see the water sales is the $827,000 over budget. The other revenue, that's $579,000. Almost all of that is interest income. because we're still sitting on big balances making 5.4%. As you may have heard, the Fed cut 50 basis points, so our interest rate, we'll start to see that come down. Maybe not for a little bit, because PTIFs have some investments that we understand don't mature for 90 days, but probably at that point we'll start to see our what we're earning start to come down. Let's see, that's all pretty good. Oh, development related collections, just interesting. We'll actually cover that later, sorry. Operations, we continue our non-O&M. So our non-maintenance and repair, operations, maintenance, and repair is very close to budget. We're 3% under. We are still seeing some nice savings in operations because of repairs still being lower than budgeted. Plus, we had had one person in our budget in distribution that we were going to hire. We've put that off. We didn't need to do that this year. So that's adding to some of the savings we're seeing in operations. So save about $500,000 under budget, a little bit more. Cash, as you can see on the far left, we're still sitting on about $40 million. All of that except what's in the bank, you know, the operating $400,000, $500,000, all of that's invested. So that's why we're getting big interest returns. The big change this month, at the top, you'll see cash. Our cash reserves went up quite a bit. Basically, we took some money out of the 2023 bond for the building, so that's why the bottom line goes down and the top line goes up. We're paying bills, and that's just the flow of the cash. The other line that goes up quite a bit, the debt reserves held by trustee, that's basically our escrow payment every month, about 400 grand. So at the end of so in December, we can make our $3 million worth of bond payments. So cash looking good. All right, let's go down a little bit more. So this is kind of that customer growth. In August, we had 6 new requests for connections. So we are now officially below 2020 numbers. So our requests are lower. The good side of that, if 2 of those impact fees were quite large, there was a home in the colony that paid about $80,000. And there was also the Justice Center that paid about $50,000. So that helped us on the money side, but future connections are dropping pretty significantly. You can see Promontory is at 16. So they too have lots sold. So they've dropped below 2020. We are taking that into account in the budgeting for next year, which you'll see in my next part of my presentation. Okay. Going down a little bit, the reason, and this is the driver of the revenue, as I was kind of talking about. And hey, since he stood up, I'll stand. So this year, our customers have used 377 acre feet in August. The 4-year average was 323. Last year, we only used 314. So you can see that is what made us have that big variance in August, is the increased usage. This usage is still not as high as 2020, when that was our record year, let's say, our high watermark of having to produce and generate water. And then if you look at the year, we're up to 1,528 versus last year, just 1,237. Remember, we had a cool spring last year, but still 1,528 is still below 2020. So when you take in all the growth that's happened over the 4 years, you can see on a per connection basis, it's significantly less, but we're, you know, for this year, we're a little bit of still under 2020. But, you know, we can't predict revenue based on high usage years, although that'd be nice. Okay, let's go down a little bit. So that's why you're getting in. That blue line is higher than we would have thought. You know, we knew there'd be a gap. That's why we had the 8%. We didn't know the gap would be that big because of the higher usage. And as you can see, kind of a typical, the residential is really what's well above budget. That 130,000, you can see standby fees. They've been running lower because we had more people convert over. So they add to the top line instead of this standby fees line. But, you know,
churches, schools, those who watch it a little bit more are closer, but a lot of residential, just turn it on and it goes. And also the irrigation, not irrigation golf. We got that pretty close, but that's more like watering at HOAs or big complexes. That's what's causing the variance. And that's kind of, so that's the financial picture through August. Yeah, don't have any idea on September yet. It's hard to say. We kind of had cool, hot, so yeah. We'll see what usage is like. We were talking earlier, we've seen Home Depot the other day blowing out their sprinkling system. I was joking, you know, so some people start. So we'll, September always drops. It's just how big a drop it is.
I think I already have mine scheduled, too. I don't remember when it's going to be, but they already are calling to blow out sprinklers.
So in this meeting, we usually talk about revenue. Obviously, I'm doing some stuff on the backside of costs to know how much revenue we're going to have to generate. Let's go ahead. This was kind of, if you wanted to read, it gives you some background. Well, just a little bit. Sorry, Chris. That way. So we're doing it. We talked about, and the plan is still to do a tiered rate increase. So last year we did 8% across every base, every rate. So it was kind of hit. Let's say it would impact a small user more than a big user. For this year, we talked about we wanted to go back to a 2022 where we tier it in, where it's a smaller rate increase for the smaller users and bigger for those who push demand on the system. So we added one category this year. So we've got small user, we're calling 100,000 gallons or 0.31 acre feet a year. And average user, 135 gallons, about 0.41 acre feet. Above average, 200,000 gallons. Large user, very large user. So that's annual usage. For our small users, we're looking at roughly a $30 annual increase. So, you know, under $3 a month. We've got 2.5. Average user, you know, 3.6%, $45 annually, above average, $100 annually. You'll see the large user, almost $700, and the very large user, $2,300. On a purely conservative nature, it's a little bit riskier because I'm kind of counting on usage in the higher tiers. But I think it's, last year I said, let me do 8% and get a feel for usage again. So I think this will be safe. So when you think of that, so, you know, 10 large users paying $2,300 more a month is $23,000. When you look at the small users, you'd have to have like 1,000 of those to generate the same money. So we're going to generate a lot of more money off our big users. And because, hey, if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't be having to do nearly as much in source development and wear and tear on our things and stuff like that. Okay.
How many connections do you actually have?
Get to you in a second. No, that's a good question. I've done some math, but I'll help you. I may have to do a little math in my head on the fly. Chris, do you want to pull up that picture, that pie chart? So another way to look at this is we have 37% of our users I would put in that small user category, you know, where 100,000 gallons a year, 5,000 kind of in the off months, maybe 15 during the summer months. Then our average user, 31% of our customers, 20% are that above average user, 10% kind of that large user, and then there's 2% that are very large users. Those 2% are going to generate a lot of extra revenue. And they, in 2022, some of them did come out of the rate, but we were charging $75 per thousand. But we're getting up there. You'll see if you saw the rates that I'm projecting, it's getting up there, not that high, but
75,000.
That's what we charged during the drought restrictions. We have, for simple math, a little under 6,000 connections. So you can kind of do 37% times 6,000. About 5,700, 5,800 right now, total connections. I have it, but I don't have it in my head. So when you think of a percentage, that's that many customers.
Finished water, not.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Let's go, if you don't mind going back to that memo a little bit, and we'll scroll down on that. So wanted to give you kind of a big picture revenue. So for 2024, we budgeted 13.8 million from operations, 16.6 in total. Our projection now is we're going to come in at about 18.2. So we're going to make about 1.7 million more than we would have thought. Our budget for 2025, 16.7, not going to have, this was going to be the original what I thought. Once I started finalizing some costs, I think I felt we needed to generate a little more revenue than this just to be safe. So I think the updated, I think there's an updated revenue, total revenue updated. So now you see that top line, we're generating a little bit more in water sales. So water sales itself will go up about 9.88%. Growth is about 2%. I'm predicting about 2% more usage. So the rate increase is roughly 5.5. That I think is a good, if you balance it all out, as you see, it's weighted more towards the large users, but that's the amount the rate increase is. The remaining part of that 9% is kind of growth and usage. Okay. Weber Basin, we do drop revenue next year because we actually drop 100 acre feet. So that's why that's going down. And if you recall, in 2026, we don't sell them anything. So that's what's going to cause our rate increase in the next year to probably have to be a little bigger, not because of debt or anything like that. We've absorbed the building. We won't be paying the treatment plant yet, but we're going to have to figure out a way to cover what we're going to lose from Weber Basin. On the non-operating.
Because that was pretty, expensive water for them to make, was creating a fair amount of revenue.
It was creating a fair amount of revenue. We gave them a much better deal than Park City did, but it still generated money out of water we were going to produce anyway. We had excess. Now we're kind of running out of the excess water, so we don't have that to sell to them.
But we'll sell it to the users.
But we're selling it to the users. And that was kind of the plan all along. Like, as our users needed more water,
yeah,
we'd be pulling back from Weber Basin. So that's why that buys us a couple of years or whatever till the treatment plant needs to be done.
400 acre feet out of that 500 is the remainder of the settlement water.
And that's even less expensive. But that is fully treated water, so that is something that our users can, our connections can use. It's not raw water, it's not Park City water, it's, lack of a better term, it's good water. It can go right to our system and help meet the demand. So,
that was the idea. We couldn't really use it, so
we're gonna sell it until we needed it.
And then users, it kind of seems like it would balance.
And it's balancing out pretty well, let's say. Interest earnings. We're going to still be carrying some large balances, and I worked on a model with interest rates dropping, cash balances dropping, and still show that we'll be able to generate over $1 million in interest earnings, but it will be down off of what we budgeted and definitely down from what we generated this year. Impact fees dropped by $200,000. I think $600,000 will be doable next year. We've got one big Canyons workforce project that'll probably help us get there. But wanted to drop that down. Promontory assessments, they sold a lot during the pandemic, so they kind of have a savings account with us. So they're not selling as much, but they don't have to make up for that because I just pull it out of savings. But their revenue number will be down. And Stagecoach is kind of the same. We're getting closer to the end of Stagecoach, so a lot of their people, the assessments have been paid for and things like that. So just a little bit dropping down at the end because they're almost done. So total revenue, we're looking about a $400,000 increase between the increases and the decreases. We're looking at about that same dollar amount as an expense increase. So basically, we're going to try as best we can to replicate how much money we're going to make, how much money we're going to throw off, and keep rates reasonable to our customers, if I can summarize it that succinctly. But that's the goal. Let's go ahead and go down to that rate sheet. I think it's the next one. So the first box is probably the most important. This is for all of our residential customers. So you'll see the base has been 7209 this year. We're just kind of making it a nice round number, so it's easy, 73%, just a 1.25% increase. Customer service gets a lot of calls of, why am I paying so much even if I don't use any water? And it's reasonable. We do have fixed costs, infrastructure costs that we have to, so it's justified, but it also kind of is explainable. We're keeping the 5,000 here, just a 4%, the 5 to 20,000, 6.76%. We often refer to that as essential water or indoor water. That's what you need to live on, you know, to wash your clothes, do your dishes, things like that. Once you start using more than 20, you're really getting into, I'm watering lawn, I'm keeping plants alive, that kind of stuff. So that seemed the more appropriate spot to really start to increase the rate, you know, and kind of going up from there. And then you'll see the over 100,000. So basically you don't care how much water you're using. It was at 3780. We're going to say $55. So somebody who's really just blowing through it, doesn't care, you're going to help us, you know, by offsetting, by generating the revenue. So that's, we will have to have a rate hearing sometime in October, November, probably November, I would think, just to get this approved. Nobody usually ever comes or cares. But that's the assumption I'm working off of. So if you have concerns or thoughts, I'm willing to work. It would be safer, obviously, for us if we put more in the 5,000 gallon or the higher tiers, If we put, if we increase these, it's a lot safer because we know that water is going to be used. Here, it's just a little bit more risky because you can never know. It could be literally we have this great rainy summer, so people don't use as much water, and that's kind of scary. If it's really dry, like if we get no snow and we kick into drought rates, then we're okay because then we can tap into the drought reserve we have. So probably this is just almost more scary if it rains a lot. But I think we've been talking about this internally. I think everybody's had at least Anna, Lisa, Andy, and I have had a chance to look at these numbers a couple of times. So that's where it's kind of at. Any thoughts? I think we're going about this in a reasonable, responsible manner. I obviously feel we do, but you can.
I do. I like going with the conservation rates and making it more punitive.
Yeah.
I mean, I think as a community in general, that's what we need to do. And I think the people that are using 100,000 gallons, you know, they should have paid a bigger impact fee when they first did their house. So I feel like that's fair.
Yeah, I feel very comfortable with it, so I'm okay with what we're doing, and we'll have to see. You know, we'll see what happens next year, and I've almost, over the next several years, we're going to have rate increases, and maybe it's 1 year, it's kind of a flat, everybody gets the same, the next year, we go back to tiers, conservation rates, and just kind of see how that plays out, but I feel pretty good about this. I think that's about it I had. Oh, this was kind of that mock-up. sorry, I had to shrink that a little bit now. So when we were talking about small user, average user, and that pie chart, so this is what we're kind of classifying as a small user. They use 5,000 gallons a month here. They're paying roughly $82, $83 for a bill. Now they'll be paying a little over $84 next year with the rate increase. You know, they use 15,000 in the summer. So they're paying 139, they'll pay 145. And then you can kind of see where people different fit. If you've got a large user, and there's a percentage of them that do that, you know, they're using over 100,000 a month during the irrigation months. And so they've been used to paying a bill that's $1,700, $1,800. They'll be paying a bill that's closer to $2,300, $2,400. So kind of if you wanted to look at where you yourself might fit in that category. But again, about 80% of our customers would see 5% or less. And about 20% will see either that 18 or 29%, kind of along those lines like you see. Yes, it's even maybe a little higher. 88% would be more in that 5% or lower. But that 12%, like I was trying to explain, you get somebody who's paying $2,000 who's now paying $3,000, that makes up for a lot of small people not having to pay as much. Small users not having to pay as much.
Yeah, no, I really think you thought everything out. I liked all the graphs. I thought you guys did a great job.
But it's and your crystal ball has an incredible track record so far. So,
I always feel this way that every year when we get to this point, I feel like have I tightened it too much? Everything keeps working out to our favor. One of these years we're going to have it where it doesn't all work out perfectly. You know, like, well, we'll be like, well, we're only $100,000 over budget and we've only saved $50,000 on our expenses, but we're right on budget and I'll sell it to your heart and you'll love it. But there'll be a year where it won't be where things look quite as rosy. So just prepping you a little bit just in case.
I'm just looking at the $196,000 that you were over that you seem to be a little bummed out about. And that's $32 a user.
Yeah.
You know, you're within 3.5%. Like that's a pretty good crystal ball.
Well, I spend a fair amount of time playing with this every month. So trying to look into it. So thanks. But yeah, have a nice budget presentation next month. It'll be, as you recall, last year we kind of changed it to a little bit shorter presentation, you know, not quite as much weeds, but we'll hit everything that's really important. I'll show you some of the expenses that are changing. A couple of the, we're doing well on a lot of areas. The two areas that are kind of getting us a little bit is buying the EAM software, which I think is a great investment, but we're going to be paying licensing fees for a software to help us manage our assets. That costs money. And also replacing Cassell and getting a more robust accounting billing package in place that we can do more with. That's going to cost a little bit. The other is the carbon, we've decided to accelerate our expensing of that because it is needing to be replaced more frequently. So those are a couple of the things that we'll see in the expense budget when we go over that next month too. So
what's a carbon change out cost in nowadays?
For two vessels, about $135,000, about 60.
To do them both.
Yeah, to do them both. And we do two at a time. So you're 60 to 70 right now per vessel. And we have four. And basically we're replacing two every year now. Before we replaced two every other year. So we've doubled how fast we're doing it. But
thank you.
You're welcome.
And you replace that two times a year? Is that what you said?
Two vessels every year.
Oh,
we
used
to do two vessels every other year. So we basically doubled up.
We're just running more water.
Running more water, seeing the benefit of doing it. Quality taste. I don't know. Sam and Jess could probably speak to that a little bit better than I could, but it seems like it helps, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We need to lean on for organics removal. This has been our hardest year since I've been here trying to meet water quality goals. So it'll help a lot.
Yeah.
We got to be smart about how we use it to process water.
Yeah. Excellent. Thank you, everybody.
It's budget season.
It's budget season. It you're also excited, aren't you?
Yeah, it took me a minute.
All right, you're still on for the WIFIA update.
The WIFIA. Okay, kind of like I alluded to when we were talking, Lisa did a lot of upfront work getting the application prepped, getting kind of everything in. She asked me to run some models. We joked, it's the first time I've ever run a model that I'm pretty sure will outlive me because you have to go out 40 years. If I'm around in 40 years, let's have a party because I don't think it's going to happen. Come find me at 95. I'd really like that. So the real positives of that is a lower interest rate right now, a little under 4%, the being able to push off that first payment for 5 years. Cause I used to always tell joke with Sam, like now that you convinced me, it's not if or when on the treatment plant, it's when. Now just buy me time. So we bought a little bit of time. Lisa and the WIFIA and all of us are helping us buy a little more time. Andy, Lisa, and I got on a phone call with Brian Baker, who you recall is our Zions finance person. We already see where we could, once the building, that where we kind of knew it was a tough time to
get going, but we need to get going on it. There's some savings. We're going to refinance that sometime in the next, let's say, 6 months,
right,
to 9 months, maybe six. We're kind of watching these rates a little bit, watching what will happen. But that'll help also because it'll decrease the debt payment on that. So when the WIFIA payment does come on, we already have a decreased debt payment on the building. So good signs all around. WIFIA is going to, I mean, it's a new world for us. There's going to be more requirements. It's going to take some work and things like that. But
it's a lot of reporting. A
lot of reporting and getting through the application, I think, will – there's not somebody like Brian Baker cheering you on the other side because he's got a commission waiting. It's federal government who's saying, yeah, we'll get to it. So you gotta push it a lot, it seems like. But the pros of it will help us out financially a lot as a district. So did you have anything else you wanted to add to that with the update? Oh. Yes, and Andy knows where I do need to add something to that. And part of that is we have to pay a $25,000 application fee. Non-refundable. It does get credited back to their fees later on. But so we need kind of, we need their go ahead to kind of get going with that. And then we'll do some paperwork like you've seen before. It's not committing us to a loan, but it is saying it's kind of there. Are you serious about this or not fee? So
I was thinking, well, maybe we should ask Dave, but do we need a parameters resolution? Is the application that we're submitting to WIFIA, would that need to trigger a parameters resolution to council?
No, because you're not incurring any debt yet.
Okay.
It's just the application.
It's just the application with a $25,000 deposit.
I mean, it puts $25,000 at risk.
Yeah.
But it's not technically debt.
Okay. The council is supposed to get involved when we're getting ready to issue the debt and set parameters. Okay.
So this is treatment plant funding?
Yes.
It's not, or is it?
It's treatment plant.
It's not refinancing.
No, sorry. I didn't mean to confuse. The WIFIA funding will be used to do the treatment plant expansion.
80%.
We've already borrowed for the building, the admin office, and the from Bank of Utah,
yeah.
That $18 million.
Okay.
We can already save some money. Revenue rates, revenue bond
interest rates
have come down. Interest rates have come down. So now we can go out to market and save some money there.
With Bank of Utah?
No, with Bank of Utah. We'll go out to market like we have with other bonds.
And with that loan, yes, with that 18.
With that loan. We'll refinance the $18
million. Okay. And then for treatment plant, it's more with you.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep.
And as Steve said, Lisa has put a tremendous amount of effort in the background because it is not a simple, straightforward process. I mean, it is. And the same thing with, you know, the reimbursement, the infrastructure reduction stuff for the solar array, that's all been on Lisa, and she's kind of been working that. It'll cause us to file a tax return next year. So.
And it'll take a little bit of time to close the WIFIA loan. The statistics they have, it's 84% close within 12 months. So we have a year from when we received our letter of intent to fill that, do the application to get the $25,000 deposit in. And then it, you know, will probably be another year of closing. So that aligns pretty well with the design timeline that Jacobs has. We're getting those design costs a little bit more locked down in 2025, and then we can close the loan to get construction going in 2026 if that timeline all works out, depending on how this testing goes. So,
well, fantastic work, really. I know it's a ton of work, but gosh, that's really going to benefit us by being able to spread it out over a long period of time.
So is everyone comfortable with us spending $25,000? Moving forward?
I am. Do we need to make a motion on that, or?
Counselor?
$25,000.
It's under the current year.
It's under 50 under the current code, so no.
We just wanted to get your buy-in. Because it is non-refundable.
Okay, well, we are up to you, Andy.
In the packet, I put some photos of where we were. These are now dated since these photos have been taken of the admin building. That has all been cemented. We have a floor. We are hoping to get the steel in production and have it delivered. They are hounding the production company to try to get the steel as soon as possible. If you've had an opportunity to drive along the frontage road, you should see steel erected for the shop. So you can actually see the skeleton of how the shop is coming. If it was still daylight out, we could go up to the deck outside and look across, and you can see it from here as well. And you'll notice the crane that's up behind High Valley. That's for us. So that is all progressing and moving along. I think we're getting closer to an agreement with the county for overall excavation and improvements to the Gilmore parcel. Dave has promised me that it will happen someday.
Yeah, and it's only, what is it, $3 million now?
I don't know if you can joke in this team, in this crowd with that, Dave.
Yeah.
The county has committed to WIFIA similar financing over 40 years, 5 years deferred.
I do that.
What's the issue with the Gilmore property? I don't recall that.
So, when we purchased the property, we entered into an infrastructure reimbursement agreement with the county. At that time, the initial estimate was $692,000, rough number.
Right.
We didn't realize there was as much rock ledge that had to be blasted out of that project. So the county continued with blasting and excavating. We decided at the same time, since Wardell was in there doing that work, that we would have them do the excavation for our facilities, because we figured it would be cheaper to continue and not have them remove and everything. And so, those costs are also baked into this number that we owe the county. The number as of last Friday was about $1.5 million. So it is a little higher. $157,000 of that is for excavation of the two facilities. And then you see in the distance, that's where the pipe storage and everything will be.
Yeah, the third structure.
So that is where we're at. They're trying to negotiate what the value is, the material that was hauled off the property and then repurposed some other lots within the Gilmore subdivision. How much should we be reimbursed per cubic yard? So there is some cost benefit for us by staying in that. All of that just hasn't been worked out yet. So it is coming along. We meet with Oakland weekly. I probably talk to Oakland daily. The biggest concern right now is making sure we get things as buttoned up as we can, if possible, before snow comes down to this level. So exciting.
Yes, the shop building should be dried in before we get any serious weather.
So they can at least mobilize out of that, keep things dry underneath in the shop as they work on the other buildings.
They got to try and work all winter.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I also included in the packet the note that we received from the Division of Drinking Water. It's related to our system-specific minimum sizing requirements, and we are compliant with everything that the state has said. I just figured in something like this, pretty important that I would just include it in there for your reference.
How often do they evaluate this?
It's a good question. Every 3 years. Okay. The other thing, and we'll hopefully have something in for the next month's packet, we did have our sanitary survey. Is that just last week?
Yeah. It's funny because
we just had our sanitary survey and you know, Brand up at the plant got kudos from Sarah Page, and we, you know, had a couple things that we needed to correct, nothing major. We're just waiting for the final report, so once we get that, we will include that in the packet. So thanks to Sam and everyone on the distribution team that were able to assist with that. That's all I have.
Okay. Did anyone have any questions on the department updates?
Nope.
Am I the only one that reads the packet in advance? I have questions. I do. Okay.
And Brian's not here, so we know you're going to have one for
him. Oh, I do have one for Brian. Yeah.
We got him.
So the Sunkeep Well 2 that failed, is that the one that we just brought back online this year?
Yep.
Oh, that's disappointing, huh?
Yep. Not happy.
Yeah.
It's actually been pulled. I was over there today, and they've actually already pulled it to look at it.
Okay. And then on the timeline, it looks like there's an 11-6 County Council budget presentation. Do you need me to be there for that?
As we get closer, yes.
Okay.
That, I think, is tentative. We have not seen that. I believe that's what Annette had sent out several weeks ago. I think that's where that date had come from.
Usually the first Wednesday in November.
Or if you want me to take a sneak peek at the budget before you present it next month, let me know.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't have any other questions. Do we have anything else before we adjourn?
I have one or two questions. How problematic were the problematic areas that we have? I mean, is Summit Park still a challenge?
I don't think Summit Park had anything this month, did they?
There are still some things related to the woodland improvement. One of the things we have been focusing on doing a line replacement on Upper Evergreen. The county approached us a week or so ago saying that they're going to be doing work on Matterhorn, wondering to know if we want to jump in on that project. We think it would be beneficial for us to do that. We're trying to figure out if we can do both projects next year. More than likely, we'll just do the Matterhorn project and then do the Upper Evergreen project the following year. We don't think, with the challenges in Summit Park, the narrowness of the roads and the lack of ability to really stage, we don't want to do that over two phases, just based on the feedback that we've gotten from Woodland. Some of it positive, some of it not. We have had PRV in the canyons fail again. So they've had to fix that. We had a leak over on Richmond, just a lateral, nothing major. So the work has been spread out throughout the district, and that's just the way it is.
Okay. My next question is, do we have a strategic plan, like 5 years out or whatever?
You will get that next month.
Okay, great. Thank you. The other question I have is, it's kind of like the first question. Any more problematic areas that are challenged for us?
Yeah, I mean, there are things that are visible and there are things that are not visible. And so the things that are not visible that worry us, right? Because we don't know until they surface and then you have to react. And so
yeah.
One of the reasons why we're doing the Upper Evergreen is because that had been a problematic area two years ago. So we spent this year designing it. We were hoping to address it sooner. But, you know, it's just the nature of running a water system, right? You're always going to have leaks and you try to mitigate them. I mean, Lisa's done a great job working on conservation and removing the grass and things like that. So we're trying to be proactive on those things and controlling the things that we can control and dealing with the things that we cannot necessarily control, but we're trying to be proactive in doing those things. And of course, we're limited by funding, you know, so this year, we're fortunate that we're going to generate some extra funds that we'll be able to use for other capital projects. It's then the question is, what is the priority in trying to figure out?
That was my next question.
Yeah. So, you know, the improvements at Old Ranch Road, we took a lot of that work in-house. We should have some savings there. The savings have been good. We'll be able to allocate those resources to other places in the district, including vehicle replacements and other things like that. So,
okay.
Yeah, we just take it one day at a time.
That's all you can do.
Yeah.
Be nice if you could read the future.
It would be nice if I had Steve's crystal ball.
The other question I have is, I mean, are we being proactive enough with everything that's going on? Are we making good decisions? Are we maybe thinking about costs? Or thinking about returns, or thinking about expansion, things like that.
We are.
And that may be in the strategic plan, some of that.
Yeah, and the strategic plan is going to be a one-page working document that we can deal with things in our, you know, try to plan far out and deal with the things that we know are in the near future, knowing that we can't always control our destiny like Lake Rockport States. You know, what we want to do versus what we're being asked to do. So we're just trying to focus on the things that we can control here and now with the staff that we have, with the budget that we have. If we had unlimited money, we'd love to do more projects. We'd love to do more line replacements. We'd love to do more upgrades. We'd love to, you know, do things, but we're trying to be as proactive in the asset management program that we're going to start interviewing four candidates. Starting next week, I think we'll hopefully focus on prioritizing projects, prioritizing dollars to throw at those projects. I think that will help us plan out where we need to be and where we're going to be in the next several years, knowing what we know today. But we don't know what tomorrow's going to bring, and that's the limitation.
I want you to work on that.
I'm going to try.
Okay. I don't have any more questions. I know people want to leave, so I don't
still spending time with you is...
Oh, it's cool as hell, yeah, I know.
Yeah. I know it's crazy that it's dark now when we get out of these meetings. So do we have a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Okay.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
All right.
We're adjourned at 8:02.